Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Walls in Our Minds. I'm still waiting for the show host, Terry Dodd, to show up online. So I'm going to switch to a little bit of music right now while we wait for others to get online. Hang in there.
Well, good evening and welcome to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd, and I'm not sure who else is on with us already tonight, but I will open us in prayer. Heavenly Father, we come before you tonight and we ask that you your presence be with us in this show tonight. This is going to be probably a little bit disturbing for some of our listeners to hear some of what we're going to be talking about tonight, and I pray that you help us to bring out the message that you want conveyed. And there's an awful lot of evil out there in the world, Father, and we pray that the truth that we bring forward tonight will help people recognize their need for you. And we just pray that you surround the victims of some of what we're talking about tonight with your love and wrap them up in your arms and have Yahshua and your spirit walk with them and comfort them and strengthen them and help them to know that they are loved and care about. We're thankful for the opportunity to serve your will here at Walls in Our Minds. And I also want to lift up our buddy, Red Beckman, who may well be listening right now, and strengthen him, Father. Give him a good, steady heartbeat and strengthen him and help him to heal. We pray your healing hand would be on him. And just thank you so much for being there for us, that we can turn to you no matter what happens in this evil world. We know that yours is the victory ultimately. And it's in the name of your son, Yahshua HaMashiach, that we pray. Amen. Well, who have we got on here, Kate? Do we have Doug or David or any of the folks with live mics yet? No. Well, this is an interesting conversation we're going to be having tonight. Our guest is David Schurter, who's been on here at Walls in Our Minds in the past. He's been a victim of mind control and conditioning as a young man, and now that he's an adult, he's out fighting this battle. He's found his relationship with our Creator, and we're just looking forward to having him share with us this evening. Area code 434, Doug, is that you?
Yes, we're here.
Doug, do you have Dave with you, or is Dave calling in separately?
No, I thought you arranged it, to be honest with you. I called Dave about 20 minutes ago and asked him, had you arranged for him to call the show or call whatever? And he has not. I asked him to call me back immediately so we could discuss this, because we're having trouble finding the information on the internet.
Okay. All right. So let me see if I should have that number, and I'll just hook him in. Everyone be patient for just a minute. Doug, if you have any history on this doctor situation in Iowa, you want to wait till we get David on here with us?
I think we should wait. Do you have his new number?
Let me see. Did you patch him in with me, or did I patch him in with you the other day?
I patched him in with you.
You're on your phone, so you probably have trouble.
I'm listening. I'm just, it's an area code 206. It's a
hang on.
Number. Do you want me to...
Let's not give it over the, over the
no,
deal.
No, I'm just saying, do you want me to call?
Just give me a second here and see if I can, well, I don't have him in my, cell phone right at the moment. So is there a chance you could text me with it so that I could get a clear reception? Because when you hook him in, it's not quite as clear.
Of course. Right. Okay.
Or either that or call him and give him the call-in number.
Well, the problem is I've already done that. Call him, and he hasn't called me back in the last 20 minutes, so I don't even know if he's listening to his voicemail. I don't know what's going on. So I'm going to text you the number, and you can call him.
That would be good. Thank you.
All right.
Well, sorry about that, folks. I have a little technical issue going on here. I thought that David had all of our call-in numbers, so we will get this squared away and get things on the road very quickly. So, Red, you have a live mic. Would you like to at least say hello and give us a little report of how you're feeling? You might be muted.
Now, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you loud. I hear you loud and clear.
I'm listening. I'm not going to be too much involved with the pulse running about 100 to 120 up and down like a yo-yo. I don't know what's going on. So it's just I'm marginal right now, so I'm not going to be. I'll try to listen in as much as I can, but it's been a long day here, so I'll be around.
Okay, here comes the number right now, Terry.
Hello, is anyone online?
Yeah, this is Red. Is this Dr. Kate?
Yes, yes, it is, Red. Hi.
Yeah.
Are you not hearing me?
No, we were not hearing you at all.
We didn't hear you.
That was odd because I wasn't muted or anything. I had to turn my headset off and back on in order to get it to for you to hear me.
Huh.
So I'm here and I'm trying to dial up David Schroeder.
Hi, Red. I was just writing you a note.
Where are you at?
I'm in Arizona now, getting ready to come back to Montana.
Well, I'm sure you've been missed.
Yes, I have been, and I've been working my tail off, too. Just finished a big intervention today. Big documents went in today. And I had to go to Chicago for the weekend to visit my sister and go to a wedding of my sister's daughter. So I rushed down here and went to Chicago and came back. So I'm just getting back into the swing of things. Now, who is that?
I don't
that's,
know.
That's me dialing David Schurter.
Hey, I can't get to the phone right now, but if you want to get a hold of me later on or leave a message, I would love it. Thanks. Bye.
Hello, David. This is Terry Dodd. I was trying to patch you into the show Walls in Our Minds, and if you would please call in to 347-838-9176. Then after it answers, hit a 1, and Dr. Kate will give you a live mic. Again, that number is 347-838-9176. Look forward to having you on our show. Well, is Doug, are you back live? Doug, I think you may have muted yourself.
Gary, I'm here. No, I was calling Steve Schurter. I called his cell phone. I called his home phone. Have you been able to reach him by his cell phone?
I left a message. I got a voicemail.
Yeah. Me too. So, as he told you 2 days ago, he was suffering with deep depression. He has not had his meds for a couple of months. And I tried to get him on lithium orotate last week. He was calling back in an hour, and it took him almost a week to call me back. So he's really in a tailspin without his medication. And he said he couldn't get his medication until the end of the month for some weird reason. I have no idea what's going on. But because of what he's exposing, you know, involving Michael Aquino, who was a general in charge of the National Security Agency, there's no telling why. I mean, I have good suspicions of why he can't get his drugs.
We don't need to make excuses for what's going on there. I sent him the contact information before, but we don't need to go there. We need to be talking. We got dead air going here, and we need to get our listeners involved in what's going on. And let me pull this up. I didn't really have anything else scheduled to discuss other than what David wanted to talk about tonight. So let me pull this up.
I wrote down two cases here, Terry. I wrote down the two cases involving Omaha arrest, where April the 30th, and then arraignment May the 23rd, Dr. Dennis Jones. So I thought maybe we ought to talk about the April 30th event first, Omaha, and then go into the doctor. Do you want me to cover that, or what? Do you want to do it, or what?
No, go ahead and share what you're talking about, Doug.
Okay. Folks, Dave Schurter called me last Tuesday, which, of course, would be May the 27th, and we had a real good discussion, and I called Terry Dodd, the host for this event tonight, with Red Beckman, of course, and so we had a great conversation for a lengthy one, and Dave... The reason we discussed already having Dave as our guest. Dave's calling me right now. Just a minute here. Please take up the slack. I'll be right back with you.
Well, what he's referring to is David Schurter was involved with much of the goings-on that you may have read in the Franklin cover-up by John DeCamp, which revealed pedophilia and sex rings and things like that that were going on at the time in Nebraska. And Schurter was actually a victim of brain conditioning, a disassociation.
Terry, excuse me.
Yes.
He's going to write down your number right now and call you directly.
My number or the dial-in number for the show?
Yeah, dial-in number for the show.
Okay, good, because I left that on his voicemail. I also sent it to him in Skype a couple of days ago. Just a second, Kate, and I'll give you that area code. 206 is what I believe it is, Kate. So this doctor has done a plea bargain. So what you'll hear about in the news is only just scratching the surface of what's going on with this pediatrician in Iowa. Apparently, there is a fairly substantial pornographic and pedophile ring that will be revealed as a result of this guy's plea bargain, because he was found he admitted to an inappropriate contact with a young girl, but apparently they found literally tens of thousands of pictures and photographs. And when Dave gets in here with us,
there is 1.2 million photographs the pediatrician had in his home. And also, they found in his home 9,300 child porn videos.
Is this the guy in Nebraska?
Yes, sir. Hey, welcome to Walls in Our Minds, David Schroeder. We're glad you made it.
Sorry about that. I spaced off the time. I started cooking dinner and spaced off the time.
That's all right. We're just glad you made it with us. David, give our listeners a little bit of background. I think some of them are familiar with you, but some of them may not be, and we'd just like for them to have a little bit of background on you, and then we can go from there if that's all right.
Oh, that's all right. My parents were child traffickers involved with a failed credit union called Franklin Credit in Omaha, Nebraska. I wrote a book, Rabbit Hole, detailing my experiences in my family and dealing with the people who were there. And I have spent probably about 8 or 9 years now trying to expose all of this in the survivor community. So that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Well, tell us what you've know, because what I'm seeing on the internet regarding this Dr. Dennis Seaborn Jones in Council Bluffs, Iowa, what I'm seeing is very, very limited as to a disclosure of what's really going on. So I know that you have more information than that, and if you could just, I'm sure our listeners are totally unfamiliar with this. I know I was when you told me about it. And I have not seen anything on any mainstream media anywhere on it. And so kind of start from the beginning, if you will, and enlighten us about what's really happening here.
Well, I only know a few things. My niece is actually a 911 operator, and she told my sister before this all broke that the reason why they're keeping it so quiet is because it seems to be a ring of, pedophiles in Nebraska. This doctor has gotten busted, but they are keeping it out of the news. The facts that are coming out are few and far between, and Nebraska, as we all know, that whole area has a tendency to protect pedophiles. And this guy, the doctor, he relinquished his license, which in my impression he should. But one of the things that he's only going to be charged with one count of child pornography with all of the stuff that he has. And they were his patients. With all of the stuff that he had and all of the pictures and all of the stuff, all the kids, he made a plea bargain to actually identify his victims. And so they're only going to charge him with one count of child pornography. And
that's disgusting.
It's disgusting. And there are, they they believe that it was a collection of doctors and nurses who were involved in this, and they're keeping it very hush-hush. And so the, you know, what you guys saw on the news is exactly what's coming out. I tried to call my sister today to get the skinny and find out more about it, but she has a sale, an estate sale going on. Her boyfriend's mother died, and so I'm not able to get a lot. I went online like you guys did, and getting the facts of this case is almost impossible because there's nothing out there. They're keeping it all hush and quiet.
Getting a lot of background noise. I'm not sure where it's coming from.
Sorry, I just walked outside. I'll be back inside in just a minute. I just, it was trash day, and I have to get my garbage. I live on a busy street. Well, it's not so busy, but I don't want my trash can wrecked. It'll cost me $150 if they hit it, and they left it in the road. Sorry about that. But, so the information that's coming out with the whole situation is very little. You can't get any information. I know that back home there's a lot of outrage that this guy's getting off. And the argument is that, well, one count of child pornography will still get him 20 years. That's the maximum, is 20 years for,
maybe,
you know, what? What, Doug?
Maybe 1 year, it says, from 20 years.
Yeah, one count will give him, the maximum is 20 years. And they're just saying that this whole thing is an outrage, trying to identify the victims. Okay, I'm back in. Trying to identify the victims. And it's been an outrage. It makes me wonder how many cases like this have gone on in the nation that have been kept quiet, such as this one, you know, because this can't be the only one. So how many pedophiles out there with thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of pictures and child pornography are being watched over and protected for a stupid with plea deals like he got? It just makes one wonder. And so, and from what I've heard, a lot of people think that they are scapegoating him. Now, remember Franklin Credit Union and Larry King going to jail, and yet there were so many people who were involved that didn't go to jail. People felt that Larry King was the scapegoat. And they're saying the same thing with this guy. They're scapegoating him. They're focusing on him and making him out to be this, oh, this big bad boogeyman. But how does someone proliferate such a crime, such as he has, without help? There's no way. You can't molest that many kids and be involved with that many, you know, child porn movies, and most of these were his patients. And that's what they're saying in town, is that there's no way he could have acted alone. There's no way he was just the lone, you know, pedophile. There's no way, and they're protecting him. And it's just really kind of, it's drawn a lot of outrage and a lot of criticism.
Well, you're aware that this sort of thing is not that isolated.
No.
You've witnessed this yourself throughout your life. Can you share a little bit with our listeners about that? How widespread is this across our federation?
Well, missing and exploited children have the statistics that 2,185 children are reported missing a day. That's about 800,000 kids a year. And so to think that we don't have a problem, now granted some of these are family and some of these are people that they were well known, but this whole situation, and that's just the people, the kids who are reported missing. That's not counting the kids that are used for sex, trafficked for sex, and then returned home. Much like what we saw with the case of McMartin and seven other preschools in California. When McMartin, most people focus on McMartin, but there were seven other preschools, one of them a Long Island Catholic Church preschool, that were involved in the same allegations. And you had children who were, being dropped off at preschool, were being trafficked during the day and returned home by evening so that they could go home to their parents. And so child pornography is the child sex trade is a huge multi-billion dollar business. There are a lot of people who are involved. The kids do not have to be abducted permanently to be sold into this. There are people who, the situation that was going on in Omaha was that parents were selling their kids. My parents were guilty of selling us for sex. Then there were other parents who were coerced or blackmailed into doing it. It is a multi-billion dollar business, and it basically funds a lot of the corruption that is going on, with it. The child sex trade is better than the drug trade. It's better than the gambling. It is the most... You can make the most money out of selling a kid for sex, because you can make untold amounts of money, and you can sell the child over and over and over in a day and make untold amounts of money. And the children who get abducted, they can be basically sold for sex till they are no longer desirable or they are no longer malleable. And then you have the black market organ trade, which a lot of people don't hear anything about. They don't talk about it. But in other countries, we all know that, there are a lot of people who are on transplant lists who, are on there for years. So there's a black market. So you can basically sell a kid, get an untold amount of money from a kid, selling them for sex, kill them, make a snuff film, sell that. Back in the 80s, it was 50 or 60,000. I have no idea what it would be like right now. And then turn around and harvest the kids' organs and sell them on the black market. And so you are looking at an untold amount of money on just one child alone. And here we have 2,185 kids disappearing a day. And so you guys can do the math, And I think that it's such a vast problem and such an intense problem that none of us could do the math, because it's making so much money. I personally believe in the 9 years that I have actually gone through, and the child sex trade is what's funding a lot of the stuff that shouldn't be funded. We are funding wars on child sex trade. And it's not just here, it's in other countries as well. It's prolific worldwide, and I am not one of those people who says, "Oh, it's a bunch of Satanists," even though a lot of them do, a lot of them in my history were Satanists. But it's not Satanists so much that we're looking for, as we're looking for large scale pedophiles, and that's basically what we're looking at is this whole sex trade of kids. Now you look at Hollywood and you're starting to see that Hollywood is starting to come out and actually claim that pedophiles were really, in control of Hollywood as well, which I think that everyone has known for quite some time. But knowing and doing anything about it are two totally different things. And a lot of people, I think the reason why this whole situation has allowed to grow and prosper as it has is because people either are afraid of it or they're entertained by it. It's like a 15-second bleep, and it's like, oh, my God, did you hear? And people will go to the, you know, if they're so brave, they'll go to the water cooler at work and talk about it, but it doesn't go much further than that. Franklin was a perfect example in Omaha, Nebraska. Everyone, or not everyone, but enough people knew what was going on. And still, it was allowed to go on for as long as it did. And then when it broke, the people who were really involved with it didn't get in trouble. And people in Omaha knew about it, but nobody said anything. Nobody did anything. Now we're seeing that exact replica of that same situation in Council Bluffs now. We have this doctor. The fact that he's only going to be charged with one count of child pornography when he's guilty of all of these other crimes, of all of the, you know, a vast, huge network of crime, and nothing's going to be done. People are just, you know, they talk about it, they complain about it, they bicker about it, but nobody is getting together, nobody is joining forces, nobody's making a change.
How many of these photos and videos do you understand he's in possession of?
He was in, I believe that there was the videos that he was involved with were in the thousands. I don't have exact numbers, but I knew they were in the thousands. The pictures that he had were, I don't remember how many pictures, but that was hundreds of thousands. And these were clients, patients of his that he had had for years, throughout the years. He was doing this like over and over and over and over and over, and nothing was being done about it. You know, the man is old now, and now suddenly it's breaking apart because someone came forward and actually made a complaint. But I will tell you that in Omaha, Nebraska, you can make all the complaints you want, but the judicial system and the police and all of that are accustomed and trained to look away and discredit and discount. And so you could have... Go ahead, Doug.
Excuse me. Can I ask more specifically?
Ask why?
Can I answer that question that Terry just asked you more specifically? I've done my homework on the Internet.
Yes, please do.
Okay. All right. We checked out, Terry and I both checked out KETV, but they had nothing on this doctor. It was a... That was another case where a guy, April the 30th, flagged down a cop at 2 a.m. on April the 30th and said, I can't take it anymore. I have child porn in my apartment. And they were children ages 3 to 12. The case that you told Terry and me about, of course, as you heard Terry just talking about when you came on, was Dr. Dennis Jones, and KFAB radio in Council Bluffs, where you were living before you moved to Washington just recently, and where I was with you there a couple years ago. KFAB reports that there was
KFAB. It's KFAB, Doug. It's not KFAB. It's just KFAB.
Yeah, exactly. KFAB, okay, radio. The May the 23rd, and it was a week ago tomorrow, Friday, he confessed.
We're getting a lot of background noise and clanging from somebody.
Sorry, that's me. That's me. I'm bad tonight. Sorry. I was watching this.
Dave, can you go to another room where it's quieter?
Yeah, no, that was me. I'll just stop. I thought I could do it quiet,
okay.
But I couldn't.
Here's the point. In court, federal court, last Friday, Dr. Jones pled guilty to the sex abuse of the 5-year-old girl outside of his office. And so that's the case you're talking about, and that's so upsetting to everybody, obviously. Why would he, when he acknowledged the... when they arrested him, they searched his home, they found 1.2 million photographs of the child porn, plus they found, as you said, thousands, 9,300 videos of child porn.
Doug, what site are you finding that at? Doug, what site are you finding that information at?
Okay. What I did was I couldn't find anything as a doctor with KETV, then I went ahead and just read others that were there listing different things, and that right below that is KFAB Radio's report about Dr. Dennis Jones. So you'll find on the same location where we looked for the doctor with a million plus child porn photographs. And so, but it's very little detail. Just like Dave said, it's almost like it's a non-issue. Why wasn't this story in the newspapers? Well, we know that that entire district there of two states around Omaha and Iowa, they've been protecting child pornographers, child kidnappers, and child torturers and murderers involved in Satanism, et cetera, and it was exposed in the John DeCamp's book, The Franklin Cover-Up, Child Abuse, Satanism, and Murder in Nebraska. He's exposing a nationwide and worldwide network of people torturing, murdering people, and when he wrote his book in 92, he said that already 15 people had been murdered, and most of them were people involved with this sick crime network. And they were killing off a lot of their own people to silence the rest of them. And, of course, as Dave said, Larry King was a fall guy. He was running the child porn crowd. And what was so sick about this, Larry King, his income was $1,500 a month, but he had a mansion on Embassy Row in Washington, D.C. he was paying $5,000 a month for, and he embezzled $40 million. So he had two sets of books, one for the public and then the one where he was using NAMBLA money. They deposited over $5 million in his credit union, and that all disappeared. But he was never charged with anything but embezzling funds from the credit union. He was never charged with anything to do with child abuse. Why? Because he was a personal friend and had a personal phone number of President Walker Bush. And he was providing Bush with lots of child porn that he was creating in Omaha. And so you can see why the FBI and our government, the state government of Omaha, Nebraska, have been protecting all these people, because it goes right to the White House, and not just one president, but several. So, Dave, you want to take it from there?
Well, from what I understand, from the people that I have talked to back home, they're telling me that the reason why this is being kept down is because they don't want to have Franklin come back out, because the situation right now is so similar to Franklin that they want to keep it quiet as much as they possibly can, because they're afraid that people will start correlating the problem with Franklin again and the questions will start coming out again, which it needs to, because it never stopped. Obviously the child pornography and all of that, you have one doctor, they're thinking that it is a definite ring, and yet they're going to focus on this one man. And this one man took, 9,000 videos of kids and 1.5 million pictures of kids, and nobody knew, you have to understand how small, and not only how small Omaha is, but Council Bluffs is even smaller. It's much smaller. But the whole system is designed to protect pedophiles. It really is. if you go to the court system, if you go to anybody, they'll protect the pedophiles always. And again, it just makes me wonder how prolific is this situation? How many pedophiles all around the nation are being protected because the judicial system doesn't want to focus on it? You know, you don't hear anything with news. When you hear someone has had that many outrageous crimes, and these aren't what this doctor did, he was not online downloading pictures. These are his patients. So when you talk about being 1.5 million kids, you know, pictures of kids, these are his patients. So that's 1.5 million. And I'm telling you, there's not a million people in Omaha and Council Bluffs total. And so the question is, how is this able to stay quiet for so long and nobody know about it? It's, you know, there had to have been a concerted effort. And so,
well, not only that, the numbers that I'm hearing and now seeing on the, online as well are way beyond just somebody's bad habit or even their own perversion. It seems like this was a business situation. Why would he have that many photos? Why would he have that many videos? It's beyond his own personal use.
Oh yeah, way beyond his own personal use. You know, this is a business situation. It has to be a business situation. When you consider how small Council Bluffs is, and how this must have been kept quiet, that's the reason why there's no. This should have hit national news. It should have hit national news. This should be a huge story, and it's not a huge story, and that begs the question, why is it not a big story? Why is it not a bigger story than, you know, because this is basically, you know, I don't even know what to compare it to, because you have these, you know, on the news, you know, maybe someone hit a home run at some ball game or something. That's how it's being treated. It's not being treated as this huge, horrific thing that was going on that had to have been a business situation, and there had to have been more than just one person involved. There is no way that one doctor did this much damage all by himself without anybody knowing. There's no way. Council Bluffs is a suburb of Omaha, and it only has maybe 70,000 people to it at the most. I mean, it is a small town. That's where I lived before I came out to the Pacific Northwest. And so to say that this was happening and nobody knew about it, well, the public didn't know about it, but how many parents had found out about it and gone forward and actually reported it and had nothing happen? Because this is not something, and you don't get numbers like that of child porn pictures and all of that in a year. This had to have been an ongoing, long process with a lot of people involved. A lot of people either involved in helping or turning the other cheek and turning the other way. But in Omaha, Nebraska, things have not changed. That's the reason why I left, because I knew that trying to expose my family and what was going on in Omaha and all of that, you know, I tell people that I would have more luck changing the situation by sticking my thumb up my behind and spinning in circles, because that's basically what it was like. You couldn't get anybody to do anything. You couldn't get anybody to listen. Nobody wanted to hear. And not only that, but you all had all kinds of people attacking constantly. You know, I have been attacked incessantly online, offline, all over. You know, it basically, coming forward and being a survivor and trying to tell the truth and get this actually looked at and investigated cost me everything. It cost me my friends. It cost me my relationship. It cost me everything. And that's the reason why people won't get involved. That's the reason why, you know, people ask, why didn't anyone come forward? Why doesn't it? Because first of all, it doesn't do any good, and second of all, it's basically you'll throw everything away. You know, you'll lose everything because they'll push and push and push. And that makes me, you know, again, it makes me wonder how many people are out there who know situations that were going on that deal with child pornography and the sex trafficking and all of that and won't come forward because they're scared and don't want to do anything because they don't want to get involved. And that's the type of culture that we have right now, is that nobody wants to get involved. Nobody wants to put their neck out. And the people who do put their neck out, you know, it's just, and I know that we've seen a couple, you know, incidences where now we're starting to find out child trafficking and child trafficking rings and sex rings of kids and all of that, and it's starting to come out. But as far as I'm concerned, from what I've read and what I know about the situation, we have scraped off the top of the iceberg. And there is a 50-mile iceberg underneath the water that nobody even wants to deal with. And for whatever reason, and how you can get those people, you know, Doug has spent most of his life, 20, 30 years of his life, trying to expose this. I've written a book, had a blog, have gone all over the place and spoke about this and have basically accomplished nothing other than decimating the life that I knew. Terry, you do stuff, you know, and what have we all accomplished? You know, we talk about the little remnants, but this, I don't know how to get society off of its behind enough to where we can make an effective change. My sister was a little bit excited about Hollywood and what was coming on in Hollywood, but the guy who's bringing up a lawsuit against the people who were actually, he's being decimated now. And people just, you know, talk about it. They, you know, they ask, I forget his name, but he's naming big time producers in Hollywood for sex abuse. And they're well known to have what are known as twinks, which are young homosexual males that are pretty and fun, but, you know, it's just, and I've gone online and read the stuff that was going on with him, and they're just saying, you know, well, he was involved with all of this. You know, once is, you know, that's abuse, but when you keep going back and stuff like that, that's, you wanted it. Oh, he's not a victim. But I think that mankind or our society does not understand the mindset of a survivor, of a victim. And the problem with victims of sex abuse, especially when they're kids, is, and I am as guilty of this as any other survivor, you put yourself back in situations. Yes, it looks like you've made the choice, and but it's because you gravitate to what you know. And so, therefore, you have sex, you know, women who get raped.
Hope we didn't lose
Doug.
There you are. Somebody faded. Might have been me.
Oh. But that's why you have, you know, a lot of women who get raped. Basically, when you look back in their past, they were victims of sex abuse. And what ends up happening is that that's the problem, is that abuse happens to abuse survivors constantly because they have no sense of discernment. I've been just as guilty of that as anyone, you know, putting myself in situations that I should have never put myself in, that I would have never put myself in, but I am a sexual abuse survivor. And so, you know, there's a whole mindset that goes to being a survivor. And if you're not a survivor, it's hard to understand that. And so now this guy has gone out and abused all these kids who are going to end up probably going out the rest of their life being abused. And that's the problem with sex abuse. You know, it's not, oh, well, you got abused as a kid, it's over and done with. It's not over and done with. What it ends up doing is it programs a person so that they are more apt to be victimized as adults over and over and over. And that's the true tragedy of it, is that it doesn't, it not only screws up the person's brain, it kills part of their soul.
David, one of the things that I've observed, and, you know, I've had some experiences facilitating men's groups where some of the men in those groups were victims of child abuse. They were also had been abusers themselves in some cases. I've also, you know, befriended and put in situations by the Holy Spirit where I was a confidant to people in some positions like preachers, etc. I've noticed that there is a correlation between men in power, I should say people in power, but predominantly men in power, who are looked up to and trusted because of their position, and that authority position was taken advantage of. They consumed those that they were supposed to be protecting, if you will. And it seems like this is another classic case of that, where this doctor, this, you know, and probably the people that are associated with him are likewise other powerful people. Have you not seen that pattern, you know, coming out of Franklin Credit Union and elsewhere, that is the case?
Over and over and over. When a person has enough power to control and manipulate, what ends up happening is that, you know, that whole adage of power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. The man who said that also said that great men are generally always bad men because power corrupts. And when you're able to get whatever you want and do whatever you want, the bar keeps getting higher and higher and higher. Because what ends up happening is a boredom sets in. You know, when you're working your butt off and trying to feed your family and pay for your house and all of that, you don't have time to get bored. But when you sit around and you have enough money that you couldn't spend in your own lifetime, and you have power, which money provides, where people will do anything, you know, that they can, that they, you know, anything that you want, they'll provide, they'll do anything that you want if they could. Perfect example was the Bear Boys and the King's Men in Omaha, Nebraska. I watched young gay men pander to these pedophiles just so they could have taste, just so they could have the experience of being those men and having a little taste of what those men have. My other half was as guilty as everyone else was, wanted to involve himself with Alan Bear. And, it became a huge point of contention because I would have nothing to do with Alan Bear and didn't want anybody around me to have anything to do with Alan Bear. But what ends up happening is when you can do what you want and buy whoever you want, life becomes trivial and it becomes more about controlling other people and dominating other people and seeing how far you can push the envelope. And I've watched that over and over and over with people with positions of power. Franklin was a good example, but we have so many examples that don't have anything to do with Franklin. And when it comes down to it, with sexual abuse of kids, people say, you know, oh, well, they're just, you know, these people are getting off and having their jollies. But if you do the research and you go look into child porn and you look into child abuse is not about sex. It is about power. And that is what all of the people say, is that it's about power. It's about domination. It's about control. And so that's what we're experiencing, is we're having a bunch of people who feel like they can control and basically take over these kids and do all this harm. And when you have 1.5 million pictures of kids in Council Bluffs, that is, I don't know how many were, you know, if these, how many were different kids, but let's just say you have a whole lot of kids out there who are now able to be controlled. And so basically what ends up happening is if you want to be a powerful guy in the nation and you want to control what you want, molest a bunch of kids. Eventually, they'll grow up to be adults and be pliable. They'll do whatever you want, do whatever they're told, put themselves in position after position and never know how to get out of it. And so, again, it is somewhat of a, you know, people focus on the satanic aspect of my book and say, oh, you know, I don't talk about Satanists very much in my book. It's only the first chapter or two that I talked about the Satanists and the stuff that I experienced satanically in my family. Basically what it was this whole philosophy of the New World Order and being able to control and dominate the population. And what better way to dominate and control the population than decimate the souls of their children so as their children grow older, they're easier to be controlled. And, you know, I was just watching a movie called Across the Universe, which was a musical about the 60s, and it dealt with the Beatles music. It's a really good movie for those of you who, you know, like the experience. It's kind of a love story, but it shows the Vietnam era and all of that and what was going on. And the 60s are dead in so many more ways than one, because nowadays people can't be bothered. They can't be bothered. They don't know what to do. We have no groups organizing. We have no systematic change. The youth are so busy leading these hedonistic lifestyles that deal with obtaining and getting everything they possibly can, that nobody is actually – there's no social consciousness in our nation anymore. It's dead. You know, people can say all they want, but that's what they do. They talk. They don't do anything. We don't have any marches. You know, it's people will complain and argue and basically bitch about, you know, immigrants, you know, illegal immigrants coming in from the nation. But if you look back a few years ago, they were able to organize, stand up and fight and enact a change. Since the 60s, when has anything like that happened with American citizens? Ever. You know, it's just very frustrating for me who, you know, when I first got involved with this and I was first involved with dealing with exposing all of this, I was so much more idealistic than I am now. And really when it comes down to it, I had a friend of mine tell me, wow, you're almost kind of jaded now. And she was right. I am jaded. I have no faith in mankind. I certainly have no faith in the American public. They want their TV dinners. They want to watch television. They want to go to work. They want to come home. And that's all they want to do. They, you know,
David?
Yeah.
David, in an effort to get the listeners to get a better perception of what's going on, I'd kind of like to paint a picture again and have you correct me if I need to be corrected. I don't believe that we certainly have not intended to imply that all people of power or people in fiduciary capacities or people in trusted offices, if you will, certainly not all of them have abused that power, that confidentiality, that vulnerable situation that the people come to because they are in a trusted position. But there are many people who have respected that and have conducted themselves in a proper way. But at the same time, because of the increased opportunity and increased trust level, as well as the fact that people in these positions do tend to be somewhat power hungry, a much higher percentage of them do take advantage of that circumstance and, in fact, take advantage and abuse that with the people that are under their trust or under their power. Now, those people who want to control the world, those people who want to be treated like gods, who in fact have set up a shadow government even, many of which are involved in international banking and politics, they take advantage of this situation. They actually go out and would find somebody like this Dr. Dennis Jones, who has got all of these kids available to him, and they would recruit him or put him in a compromised position himself where they could take advantage of everything that that he's got set up. And they would even do it to the extent of getting other people that are in powerful positions or bringing people into positions of power and getting them into this corrupted situation, compromising them, bribing them, blackmailing them, using all of this as a network means of control.
That's exactly it. There's an old adage. I don't want to imply that everyone in power is abusive, because in life, it's never an all or nothing. Those are two absolutes that should never be used. It's never an all or nothing type situation. But there is an old adage, one rotten apple spoils the bunch. And what we've had is we've had a group of spoiled, of rotten apples do their best to make a rotten society. And anybody who looks at our society right now and compares it to where we should be, you know, if you look at our society just in general, it looks, oh, it's not so bad. But when you compare it to an actual utopia in the way things should be, no one can say that our life, you know, I don't think that, this is probably a bad euphemism, but I don't think that if Jesus Christ came back today, we would be commended for the society that we live in. I just don't. I personally do not like the society that we've lived in. And so we have had a concerted effort with a group of bad, rotten apples to spoil the rest of everything, to keep in order, to have control. And that's basically what it is that they will find people like this doctor. They will use what he's doing against him. And you don't even have to be someone like this doctor. You can actually be a law-abiding, normal citizen, upstanding and all of that, and they can put you in positions to where they can start to control you. You know, if they can't get you in a compromising situation, they'll put your kids in a compromising situation, or they'll put your family members in a compromising situation. They'll do whatever they can to gain control of you. And that's what we're starting to find, is that this, you know, our society is focused, when you have such an influx of bullying in schools, and you have people being bullied in schools and teachers looking the other way because nothing can be done and all of that, the children are an indication of where society is going, because that is our future. Our children are our future. You know, we are not the future of our nation. Our children are. And there's no focus. There's no protection of youth. There's no protection of children. You know, when children come out and say stuff and you know, talk about abuse or anything like that, for the most part, they're discredited. I could show example after example after example that kids are being discredited. I have been dealing with the False Memory Foundation online and arguing with them, and basically their whole contention is that if you're molested as a child, you should do your own investigation and bring the facts of the situation and proof that you were molested, to otherwise it is fodder to be discredited. And so, but what child gets abused and then goes and does their own investigation to prove that abuse? You know, how many Monica Lewinsky's do we have as children? You know, oh, I kept the dress with the cum stain on it. You know, that doesn't happen. And when kids are being abused, usually when kids are being abused, it's the abuser and the child. And so it's a he said, she said situation all the time. And there's no focus on any kind of investigation, no kind of justice for the children. And so we're having these people who are enacted in power who are being, you know, our society is corrupt. It's just corrupt. They, you know, the False Memory Foundation, which I aptly call the False Memory Pedophile Protection Squad, because that is exactly what they do. They attack survivors and protect pedophiles. And basically what they want is to keep innocent people out of jail. But by keeping innocent people out of jail, they just want to keep all pedophiles out of jail. And argue that, you know, and it's just, you know, unfortunately... Well, unfortunately, people can hear it in my voice. I am somewhat jaded. I am so frustrated by what has gone on and with the situation. This doctor in Council Bluffs is just a perfect example of how the system is set up. They'll scapegoat one person when there's probably hundreds of people who are involved with it. And so you get one person off the street. But the problem is that when you're just getting one person off the street, there's thousands more just to take their place. And until we actually have a movement, a real movement that protects children and women, and dare I say it, bring back the spiritual, bring back the Christian or the God-like things that we needed, that society had been built on, and reestablish those ideals, we are going to live in an ever-growing hell. This is hell, and it's just getting worse. And it's because people don't want to actually stand up and say that the ideals that we were raised with, the Christian sense of, you know, respect your elders, you know, love your neighbor as yourself, you know, protect each other and stand up for each other. Until those ideals come back, things are not going to get better. And if that, you know, it's, you have people like Doug Mesner who are out. Now, I do have to say that he wanted to hold a satanic mass at Harvard University, and it was stopped. And so I do have to say that that was, you know, a victory for the good guys. But that's one victory. But it's time to actually bring back God into our lives. And, you know, until that happens, we're just going to fail. We are going to fail. Our kids are going to be manipulated and used. Our women are going to be mistreated. The rich are going to get richer. The powerful are going to do whatever they want, and no one's going to stand up and stop it. And as that happens, we will see the same thing that has been happening for years. Hope will eventually die. And when that happens, we might as well kiss it all goodbye, because when the hope dies, there won't be anything to change. Hope is what basically installed us all. That's what faith, you know, faith in Jesus Christ. I mean, nowadays you say that, and you can only say it in certain company, because, you know, people look at you as, oh, that's trite, and oh, that's malarkey, and you get a lot of people, but it's true. I personally have done all kinds of research, and I do think that the only way that we are going to bring back a society that we can be proud of, which we are not proud of our society nowadays. If we could bring back a society, the only way to do that is to emulate Jesus Christ and the things that were taught by Jesus Christ. And it's not trite, it's not stupid, it's a fact of life. And if people don't start embracing that and start working towards those ideals, we're just going to continually go into this no man's land where everything and anything is okay. Sorry, I'll get off my soapbox now.
No, that's you're speaking for me right now, David, and I know that you're speaking for our producer, and you're speaking for Red Beckman. I can tell you that we are all with you on this soapbox, and I don't think we need to get off of that soapbox. I think we need to be focused on that soapbox. We need to be focused on what's really important in this life, and the way that they've destabilized our society started by destabilizing our religious foundation. Now, I'm reluctant to use the word religion at all because I'm not a religious person any longer. I certainly grew up in a family that could be called religious. I grew up inside organized religion to a certain extent, but it's not a religion.
It's not religion. It's faith based.
Yes.
Having faith in something greater and having faith in God, you know, and it's, you know, because I grew up in a family full of Satanists who believed in anything, you know, sin was the way to experience life. And the more you sin, the more you experience life. But we really do need a faith-based perspective on, you know, the ideals of what's going on. It needs to stop being trivialized and made a joke out of and actually start to be respected. Because nowadays, people don't respect individuals. No, individuals are not respected. We don't respect individuals. We don't respect each other. We certainly don't, we certainly don't love our brother. We don't love our enemy. All of the stuff that Jesus Christ actually taught, very little of that is being done because it's, you know, and there is, you know, people say, oh, well, you know, when is this persecution of Christianity ever happened? It's happening today, you know, and Doug will tell you, I used to sing another tune. I used to be, you know, against religion. I didn't want to talk about God. I certainly didn't want to talk about Jesus Christ. And the misery that brought in my life and brought to me, to my table, was incomprehensible to most people. And it was actually turning around and realizing that I was wrong and that I needed to have a refocus and focus on things that were right. And, you know, when basically we've lost the ideals of a faith-based community. We've lost the ideals of what we learned through Jesus Christ. The thing, you know, the Sermon on the Mount. And all of the things that Jesus Christ spoke about how our society should be run, we've lost all that. And it has been replaced with this, everything is okay, all is good, you know, and it's not all good. You know, when you have people who are pushing to have satanic masses at Harvard, people say, oh, you know, I argued with the false memory pedophile protection squad, and they said, well, everybody has rights. Everybody has rights. They told me that Nazis had rights, you know, and basically, I don't think that anybody has the right to hate. Nobody has the right to abuse a child. Nobody has the right to abuse another person. Nobody has the right to destroy, you know, in every comprehensible way, another person. And nobody has that right. But basically, we live in a time where everything is acceptable. Everything is okay. There's no absolutes. And the one thing that I have learned in my faith-based travels is that there are absolutes. There is absolute evil, and there is absolute good, and there is absolutely a way to live your life that is just and works. And there is absolutely a way not to do that and have all kinds of chaos ensue. And until we start focusing on a faith-based perspective and we start looking at, you know, it, and people can say, oh, well, you know, he talks big. People need to realize I've completely redone my entire life. You know, I've completely left a relationship of 20 years because I no longer want to practice homosexuality because I don't believe that it's right with God. You know, I'm not self-loathing. I don't hate myself for being gay, but I also believe that there's a right way and there's a wrong way. And just because you want to do it doesn't make it right. And I think that there's just a way to live life. There's a way to live life and there's a way not to live life. And nowadays we have been so promoted. We've had so much BS promoted in the media and in politics and all of that stuff that now everyone has lost sight of what's right and wrong. And now everything seems to be okay. And funny enough, now that everything seems to be okay, nothing seems to be okay. You know, you have doctors who are running around taking pictures, pornographic pictures, and molesting their patients. That's not okay. But until we actually get back, and you know, we need to start getting the fight back that we had in the 60s. You know, when we actually had leaders, but we had politicians. Name one leader since Martin Luther King, you know, from the 60s. We had Martin Luther King, JFK, all, you know, we had so many leaders that just got decimated at one point in time, and we haven't had a leader since. You know, it's very frustrating, and I personally believe it is because we have gone so far away from God, and it's deplorable. And people want to say, you know, I know people who I've had gotten contact with, much like yourself, Terry, where I get on my bandwagon and they're like, yeah, but they won't say anything because they don't want to take the backlash from people for saying something like that. And we just need to get a little bit more courage and start standing up.
People have got to realize the depth of this, because they believe that, oh, this doctor's been caught. Well, that solved that crime. Well, the fact of the matter is this guy was an expert witness, that had been an expert witness for the Council Bluff, or either that county or the Council Bluff police. He was connected to the courts. He was connected with law enforcement, and the odds are that when this carpet starts getting shaken, some of those same people, all the way to the governor's office, all the way to the president's office, all the way to the top bankers' offices, are connected with what's going on there. And at this point, he's just being let off the hook, if you will, from 99% of what he's done, because they're protecting the other people standing on the corners of that carpet.
That's exactly what's happening. Because once you start to shake the carpet, you realize that there was more involved, more offices involved, more people involved than could ever be imagined.
And there may even be people in pulpits standing on the corners of that carpet.
Oh, yeah.
There's people in the organized religious circles right there in Council Bluff and in Omaha that are probably, you know, that the tentacles of this reach out to them. And certainly people who are probably sitting on church councils or church boards or elderships in the churches there are very likely to be some of the people that the tentacles of this reach out to. So if they can recognize who the enemy is, if they really can get a perspective on that, then they cannot justify sitting on their couches with their remote controls and watching something on television that is actually teaching their own family members to accept and normalize pornography.
Yep. You know, television has basically, most people don't realize that the greatest invention known to man has been deemed to be the Gutenberg press. And the reason why the Gutenberg press was deemed to be so important to mankind and to civilization is because it basically made knowledge available And not only did it make knowledge widely available, it gave us the educational system, because we started to realize that children are not little adults. You know, when it disgusts me when I have people who say, well, you know, there was a case, I don't remember what his name was, but it went to the Supreme Court, and now they're having him redo it. He was a teacher who raped a young girl, and he was given 30 days in jail. And the judge said that, oh, she was beyond her age, you know, she acted more above her age. And he basically blamed the victim, and she ended up committing suicide over it because he was given 30 days. Now it's gone to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has said that it has to be revamped, and the penal process needs to be fixed because he needs to spend more time in jail. But his victim's already dead. Well, that's what we're starting to see, is that a lot of people are starting to... When you let these people go, and you sit and watch television, and you do absolutely nothing, and you're outraged, but it's a quiet outrage, and you just keep it to yourself, or you talk to your friends, but nothing gets done, you are supporting pedophilia. You are supporting pedophiles. By doing nothing, you are accepting the consequences that are being given out by pedophiles. You know, the whole thing about it is that it's like Jesus, you know, Jesus Christ told his disciples, you know, some of his disciples, you'll deny me three times. And Jesus Christ, if he was alive today, how many people would deny Jesus Christ because it was the easier thing to do? Well, that's exactly what you're doing when you're allowing this to happen in your communities. And it's just, you know, something that is fodder for gossip, and you can talk about it, and, oh, you know, it makes an interesting water cooler story, but you don't do anything about it. You're supporting pedophilia. Whether or not you're conscious of it, whether or not you're saying, oh, yeah, I like pedophiles, when you turn a blind eye to this, you're supporting those pedophiles because your blind eye allows them to do what they want to do. And that's basically what people need to actually start to wake up and realize, is that, you know, our silence as a nation is allowing all of these atrocities to happen. And if we don't start doing something, if we don't start fighting back, if we don't start demanding justice for the survivors, for the victims, this is going to continue. And we, as a society, are to blame for that. Society is not the politicians. It's not the religious leaders. Society as a whole is people. It's the people who make up that society. That's you, that's me, that's everyone around us. You know, we're the ones who actually define what society should be. And being, you know, kowtowing to all of these people in power and think, oh, this is, you know, they know better. You know, here, give me the remote and let me turn on the Kardashians. That's, you know... It's this kind of behavior and this kind of mindset that has got us to the place where we are right now today. And if this continues, it's going to continue to get worse. More kids are going to get abused. Society is going to decline. And pretty soon, there'll be no idealism left, because the children who are the foundation of idealism will be so jaded before they get to be adults that our society will become cruel and toxic. And it's starting to happen now, you know? It's starting to happen now. I was one of those people for a long time who realized, you know, well, there shouldn't be a prayer in school because, you know, that would make some people uncomfortable. Well, personally now I look at it and say, if the person doesn't want to pray, then don't pray. But don't stop other people from praying. Because it was those people who actually believed in God who got me back on the right path, which I believe, you know, I'm on the right path. Now, granted, it hasn't been easy. I have spent months now basically just you know, in the depths of despair, wondering what God needs and wants of me, because I'm kind of lost right now, because I followed God and, you know, what I thought God wanted and all of that. And so it's, you know, I'm not telling anybody it's going to be an easy path, but it's well worth it, and it has to happen. We have to become a society that actually starts to fight for the things that are right and stop accepting the things that are wrong, because people say that everyone has rights. You know, everyone has rights. Well, if I have all the rights in the world, then give me your children and let me abuse them. But, of course, then where do your children's rights happen? That's what we need to start thinking about. Our children have rights, too. And, you know, it's – you basically are using a scapegoat. This doctor is a scapegoat. Larry King is a scapegoat in Franklin. Larry King was the scapegoat so that nobody else got looked at. We all focused on, oh, that big, bad black man who ran Franklin Credit Union and swindled $40 million. Well, let me tell you, with all of the money that was being made off of the cocaine that was coming in from the Contras off at Air Force Base, and all of the money that was being made with the child porn and the snuff films and all of that stuff was making, $40 million was a drop in the bucket, you know? When you consider the fact that they could throw a party and spend a couple million dollars for one party, and there were parties all the time, you know, $40 million is nothing compared to what was being made. But we all look at it. I don't know if society just gets to the point where they become intimidated and they become afraid, and, you know, I don't know what it is. But this doctor is a perfect example, a prime example. There are people who are involved with this man who knew what was going on, who turned the blind eye, and not only turned a blind eye, but there are others who opened pathways for him so that he could continue doing what he was doing. And that's what needs to be dealt with. We need to take these people who are in positions of power, who have no business being in positions of power, because they are abusing the power. And
let's talk about a drop in the bucket for a moment. What is this lifetime, this mortal lifetime, compared to eternity? People have lost perspective on what is good. They don't know the definition of what is good. I was given that definition, and I really appreciate that gift. I was told that what is good is that which will sustain you eternally. We are so wrapped up in this mortal lifetime, thinking that this is all there is, thinking that whatever we're going to get, we better get it now. Because, you know, we can't take it to the grave with us, right? We've lost complete perspective of our spirituality, of our spiritual beings, of what the purpose of this life is. You know, so many people today believe that the purpose of this life is happiness or joy, and it's not. The purpose of this life is figuring out what you have figured out, and that is that all of that just leads to death, and what we really need to be focused on is what is good, that which is going to sustain us eternally, because that's the majority of the time that we have in existence. And if we make the right choices, then we're able to live and exist in the presence of Yahweh, our creator, God, as some know him. It's not his name. His name is Yahweh. That's the name that he gave his people at Sinai. But
yeah,
we've lost this perspective. Everything is about the greed of the moment, instant gratification. This is what we've been conditioned to and is a big part of this dumbing down process. If we really saw the truth and recognized what was important and was more interested in saving our souls, which are eternal, than this mortal body, which is going to, you know, be corrupted and rot, that's a perspective that most people just don't even begin to grasp, much less really understand it.
My sister, I complained that I lost my relationship, but basically what ended up happening was that I changed the dynamics of it years ago, and in the process lost my other half, because my other half is very focused on instant gratification, whereas I was more focused. I started to become more focused on the spiritual and what was eternal. And I came out to the Pacific Northwest. I dealt with the church. I was baptized. But before I was baptized, we got into a conversation, because my church, people will say, oh, well, the church doesn't like gay people. I'm totally out in the church. Everybody knows. But the difference is that when we got into a conversation, the missionaries were at my house, were talking to me about it, and I told them, what is one life to give to God? It seems trivial. You know, what is one life? One life, you know, what, 60, 80 years? 100 if you're unlucky. But, it's just one, it's a drop in the bucket of time. And the thing about it is that we are here not because we are supposed to be happy. We're here not because we're supposed to be rich. We're here not because we're supposed to be powerful. We're here because we were supposed to be tested. And anyone who has been tested knows those tests aren't easy, you know, and the further you get, the harder it becomes, you know, getting closer to God. I tell people all the time that getting closer to God is like flying into the middle of the sun. While you're flying into the middle, parts of you are being burned away. Things that you held cherished, things, ideals that about yourself, perceptions that you had about yourself, they all get burned away until the only thing that's left is the true essence of who you are. And in order to let that happen, the ego has to be hurt. That's just, you know, our ego is our defense system. It is what we used. It's who defines us. But none of us know exactly who or what we are until we are tested and put into situations that show us who and what we are. We can talk about what we would do all day long, but until we're there and have been put in those positions, we don't have a clue. You know, certain people who would say, oh, I'd fight, run away. And people who think they'd run away often fight. You know, it's this life was not meant to be easy. You know, it's controlled by Satan. Obviously, it's controlled by Satan. The world is Satan's. If it wasn't Satan's, he wouldn't have been able to offer it to Jesus Christ. You know, wouldn't Jesus Christ have said, it's not yours, you can't offer it to me. But Jesus just said, get behind me. You know, I'm not interested. I'm not interested in your world and all your power and all your worldly goods. But we're so focused on the instant gratification of ourselves that we have forgot the love that we must share with each other. And that means protecting our children. That means putting ourselves in situations that make us uncomfortable. This guy, this doctor who has all of these photographs and all of that, if you're uncomfortable, good. You should be uncomfortable. You know, you should be uncomfortable. The people in Council Bluffs should be uncomfortable, wondering if it's their children, because it is basically the being uncomfortable that will get you off of your behind to act appropriately or act in a way that actually brings forth justice. You know, we don't learn anything. How much have you learned when you're on a Randeck chair sipping Mai Tais at the beach? You know, what are you learning there? Yeah, you're appreciating a good time, but you're not learning anything. Now, when you're in the trenches of war, boy, you learn a lot, because you have to learn a lot to survive. And that's basically what it is that what we want to, this world, this life that we're in is designed to help us survive an eternity. And what's happened is that we become so complacent with evil and so eager to have that instant gratification, to have love, to have happiness, to have, you know, all of that. And sometimes that's just not obtainable. You know, sometimes, and trust me, I am a good one to talk because I am living misery right now. You know, I'm alone. I'm out in a place. The only people that I know are the church people. They're the only things that have kept me going. That and my two dogs. And it has been rough. It's been hard. But I came out here because I was directed. I believe that it was the right thing. I believe that God was directing me to come out here. So I did it. I gave up everything to come out here to see what God had in store for me. And it has not been easy. When God starts to take over your life, you're not promised an easy situation. Jesus Christ didn't have it easy. You know, if God's only son didn't have it easy, why should we expect it to have it any easier? You know, this life is hard. It's full of strife. It's full of things that test us to our limits. If we don't live the right life, you know, that's the thing is that what ends up happening is that we, you know, people are, oh, God is love, God is love, and God is love. Trust me, I'm sure of that. God is love. But there needs to be a healthy respect, and I'll even go as far as fear of God, because God's rules are absolute. There was no room, you know, they say there's one path to heaven, but a million paths to hell. And that's basically, you know, all paths do not lead to heaven. All paths do not lead to God. You know, you can't just do whatever you want and at the end say, oh, I believe in Jesus Christ and have it all atoned. It doesn't work that way. You have to live your life for it. You have to show through your actions that you believe in heaven and you believe in what is going on to heaven if you want to make it to heaven. And nowadays, you know, kids nowadays, the biggest thing is there even a God, you know? And that's the saddest part about it is that people have actually started to lose the ideals of God and lose sight of God and lose sight of all of the things that made us solid when we were growing up. When we were a young nation, we had a lot of things that were focused and made us very solid. We had a lot of people who were very focused on faith. And it's not that everything was peachy keen back then, but it certainly isn't the chaos that it is now. And the chaos that is, you know, people would rather play their Nintendos. I don't even know if that's a, you know, I think Nintendo is outdated. But
Video games,
yeah. They'd rather play their video games, watch their movies, pop their pills, do their drugs, drink their alcohol, you know, have fun. It's this whole philosophy of being fun and be merry and all of that. And all the while, life is caving in all around us. And people are suffering. They're suffering. And we've just kind of lost sight of that. And there is a consequence to that type of behavior. There is a consequence individually, and there is a consequence societal-wise. And until we start to realize that, we are going to continue falling into the depths of hell. Because nowadays, you know, you watch television and you have little kids who are enacted as far as, you know, they're being portrayed as little adults, which is what we did before the Gutenberg press. That's getting back to that. It taught us that children were only supposed to be given so much knowledge as they got older. That it basically broke it down because children are not meant to know everything all at once. They can't handle it. They can't handle it individually, and it confuses them. And now you have children who have access to anything they want on the internet. They can obtain any information that they want. They know well beyond their years the knowledge that their parents don't even know. And what's happened is that we focus kids and turn them into little adults, which they're not psychologically, emotionally, or intellectually designed that way. We've turned them into, you know, and thus, since we've turned them into little adults, now we're starting to sexualize them, you know, and be like, oh, you know, it's really hot. Oh, it's okay for a 40 or 50-year-old guy to go lust after 14-year-old girls. It's not okay. You know, lust is one of the seven sins. You know, it's a sin. And if you do it in your heart, you've already committed the sin. You know, that's the thing about it is that people think, oh, well, I can lust, but I don't have, you know, if I don't act on it, you've already committed the sin. If it's in your heart, the sin is already there. You've already committed it. And that's the reason why I took a lot of grief, and I do take a lot of grief, because as a gay guy, I decided to go and get involved with the Mormon Church. And the Mormons have taken a lot of slack. And I can't say Mormons as a whole, if they're good or bad. I've heard a lot of things both ways. But I will tell you that the ward I'm involved with are full of decent, good, spiritual, God-abiding people who really do want to make a difference with their lives. And so, therefore, I was very lucky to fall involved into the ward that I have.
Well, relationship and family are very important issues, and whether any organized group has it all together is debatable. But the one thing that the group that you're dealing with are doing is that they're holding each other accountable, and
yeah.
Being isolated is probably the most serious mistake that we, as particularly Christian men, can make. Let's look at this doctor for a second. This Dr. Dennis Jones. Do you believe that he had a single accountable male relationship where he was close enough to somebody who was God-fearing, somebody who is a follower, you know, of the word, of the truth? Did you believe that if he'd have had just one person in his life that would hold him accountable as a peer, that he would have been at the place that he is now?
No. And that's the reason why I got involved with the Mormon Church, because they're not
a
burden.
This is a burden that we have, is it not, that we have to reach out to other people and that we participate in those kind of accountability partnerships?
Yes. We must hold each other. It's not judging each other, but it is holding each other accountable. And have, you know, there are right things and wrong things. And this man, you know, this man have anybody who held him accountable for anything? No. Not until the very end, and it makes me wonder, why now? You know, it's gone on for so long, why now? There has to be, like I said at the very beginning, scraping off of a iceberg that's 50 feet or 50 miles below surface. There's more to this. That's the reason why it's being kept so quiet, because there's still no accountability. You know, I'm sorry, but when you have 1.5 million pictures of your patients' children in sexual acts, and close to 10,000 videos, charging him with one count, which would bring him 20 years, is not an accountability. There is no accountability. And what that does is it sends a message to all of the other pedophiles, oh, it's okay. It's okay, because everything will get reduced. You know, it sends out a message. And that's basically what we're doing. When we don't act and we don't do anything and we stay quiet and we allow things to happen, we're sending a message to their children. It's okay. It's okay. You don't have to do anything. You don't have, you know, children are very intuitive. They'll pick it up. They'll pick up everything. They pick up things that we don't, as adults, don't pick up. And we're sending them the message. It's okay. You know, you can do what you want. And it'll just be plea bargained down, and it'll be fine. And everyone, you know, it's just very frustrating. It's very, very frustrating. And as someone who used to roll my eyes whenever anybody talked about God, I feel somewhat hypocritical now, because now I am on the bandwagon of there are right ways and there are wrong ways, and wrongs don't make a right. You know, it's, you can't continuously do things that are wrong, wrong and wrong and wrong, and then say the words, "Oh, I believe in Jesus Christ," and have it all redone and all taken over. And we're being tested. And I've heard a lot of people say, "Oh, we're in the last days. We're in the last days." And I told people, "Well, I certainly hope so." Because can you imagine where our society is going to be like in 100 years from now compared to where we've been or where we're going now?
Well, it'll never make it that far, because it's destroying itself.
That's just it, you know.
And that's what prophecy says is going to happen.
Yep, and that's what's happening, is that our civilizations are falling apart. They're crumbling. And now is the time to actually... You know, you have to make a decision. You have to make a decision. And if you deny God and you deny Jesus Christ, you're going to be held accountable. And I assure everyone on this call, there will be no plea bargaining. You know, there'll be no plea bargains. Well, it's already been written that we've had 2,000 plus years of it being told how things are and how things are going to be. It's not going to change in the end. You're not going to be able to plea bargain yourself down to a lesser charge. You're going to be held accountable. And so as you're turning away and turning a blind eye and looking the other way and pretending things don't exist and all of that stuff, you'll be held accountable for that. You will. We all will, you know?
And it's you've talked about your feelings of isolations at time. And I'm just pleased that you're here with us tonight. Because there's bound to be somebody out there, if it's just one person that's listening that says, "My goodness, I'm not alone. I'm not the only one that feels this way." If there's just one person out there that says that, that makes everything that we've done with this show and coming together and sharing this worthwhile 100 times. But that's really a big problem for people out there, because they are so isolated. They think that distance is safety. They think that they'll never be forgiven for the things that they've done or that they're doing. Yet there's so many others out there in that conspiracy of silence. And I'm pleased that we can have this kind of open conversation, and share these kind of ideas, and let people realize that there is another way. There is a better way. And it begins with surrendering self, really, because a lot of that fear that we have.
Repentance, sure. Being sorry for the things that you've done, praying for help, praying for forgiveness, and acting in ways that actually, you know, Jesus Christ said, you know, change your ways and sin no more. You know, you will be forgiven. But you're not going to be forgiven if you just keep doing the same crap over and over and over again, especially when you know how detrimental it is to not only to other people but to yourself. You know, there is forgiveness. There is forgiveness. God's forgiveness is eternal. But it's not just given through words. You know, there's an action that's involved with it, and you have to be involved, you know. If you're feeling bad about yourself, you know, the thing about it is that I feel bad. I'm isolated. So what do? I'm becoming a ward missionary. I have a meeting tonight that I have to go to the church and talk about people who in the community who need help as bad, if not worse, than what I do, you know. The whole thing about it is that if you go out, if you're feeling bad, you're feeling isolated, you're feeling alone, go help another person out. Trust me, there's a countless number of people out there who would appreciate any one of us standing up to help them. even if it's a friendly gesture, even if it's, you know, just doing what we can. Don't put yourself at risk, but do what you can to help. And it'll make a difference, not only in your life, but in other people's. We are our brother's keeper. You know, that's what Jesus Christ told us, is that we are our brother's keeper. We are here to help each other. And, you know, the things that we're doing can be forgiven, but true repentance has to happen. You know, you have to have a true repentance. You have to, you know, understand that what you were doing, or because we all sin. You know, I haven't met one person who could walk on water yet. There's only been one person, and that person was crucified 2,000 years ago. You know, other than that, I haven't seen one person. I haven't even heard tell of anybody walking on water. And so, you know, we're all in the same boat. And so basically, you know, we need to stand. If we're all in the same boat, then we all need to learn how to row together to get to the other side. And it's going to take all of us working together in conjunction with each other and helping each other out to get us there, you know. And this comes from someone who's not in a situation where, you know, my life is very lonely right now. I moved out here. I don't know anybody. I've lost almost all my friends. I lost my relationship. I'm out here alone. You know, I am really battling. You know, I've gone through despair, almost a suicidal despair, almost giving up. But every time I think of giving up, I think, what will happen when I meet my maker? You know, if I gave up, what would happen? You know, and that's the whole thing about it, is that we really do need to strive to help each other and to be strong with each other and really start to move the society around to where the pedophiles and all of the rotten apples that we spoke about in the last 2 hours don't have the control that they have anymore. Where people start to focus on the right things and the good things and the things that, you know, nourish us spiritually. If what you're doing does not nourish you spiritually, if what you're doing in secret because you don't want anyone else to know, chances are you're doing the wrong thing, you know. And so therefore, change, you know, pray. It's you know, praying is focusing energy of the universe and asking God for help. And I will assure everybody that prayer helps. It works. It helps. It does not change God's mind. What I just gave my testament in church a few weeks ago, and so many people have come up and said that they really thought about what I had to say, because I basically told them that prayer does not change God's mind. You're not going to convince, prayer does not change God's mind. What it does is that it opens up our hearts and our minds and our souls to the possibilities of God, and it changes us instead. And that's what prayer is so important about, is if you guys are, if anyone out there is lost, start to pray and really just, you know, believe and start to have faith. And it's not easy. Trust me, it's not easy. You know, it's not easy. It's not easy when you're alone. It's not easy when you're isolated. In fact, it's more easy to give up on God and think that there's nothing there than it is to actually focus on the good. And I was just told today, if there are people out there who are despairing, start to journal and every day write down 5 things that you are grateful for. 5 things. And you can't repeat yourself. So you can't say the same thing every 5 days or every day. You have to come up with something new. You'll run out of the trite things of, oh, I'm glad for the sunny day and I'm glad for the you know, all of the trivial stuff. You'll run out of that in 4 or 5 days. And then you'll really have to start thinking about what you're grateful for. And all of us have something in our lives to be grateful for. So just start to write down 5 things that you're grateful for and start to appreciate that. And then be grateful. Say, give thanks to God. You know, thank the universe and the heavens for providing you the things that brought you gratitude. it's easier and it's much more fulfilling than spending day after day what you've lost and what you're sad about and all of that. And
hey, Dave, this is Doug.
Yeah.
Okay, buddy.
Hey,
yeah,
Doug, I was just about to tell you, Doug, we got about 4 minutes and see if you've got any final questions here.
Yes, well, it's just such a beautiful thing to hear Dave give his Christian testimony, his relationship with Jesus Christ after what he's been through with Satanists and everything, and his where he was 2 years ago when we first met. So the bottom line is, Dave, thank you so much for your testimony, and I know that you've helped a lot of people out there with theirs. But I thank you also for referring Connie Lee to me. And we had her on for an hour last night. We tried to have her on for two. And I want to mention that your sister, if you please tell people what your sister with a master's degree in psychology, why she said she believes you are a homosexual and what you went through as a child. I think people need to know that so they don't judge you as, oh, he chose to be a homosexual.
My sisters, both of my sisters actually believe that it was the abuse that I went through that caused me to be fearful of women and become homosexual. They believed that I was not born that way, that it was through the abuse that I went through that caused that lifestyle. And I can't say whether or not I was born that way or whether or not it was the abuse. I know that I identify with it, but I also identify with God more strongly than I do the lifestyle itself. And I do believe that the gay lifestyle is corrupt. It is focused on all of the wrong things. It's you know, youth, beauty, sex, everything that we were talking about, that you know, instant gratification. That's what it's focused on. And that is why it is so unhealthy. And, so that is the reason why I've moved away from it. Not that I will ever be involved with a woman. I will never have kids. I just don't have that in me. I'm 47 years old. I've never had it in me, and I will never have it in me. But the whole thing about it is that when it comes down to it, I choose not to act upon what I'm inclined to act upon. I have made a choice. And my choice basically is to not act upon it. And it, as such, you know, when I chose that, I lost a relationship of 20 years that I cared very deeply about. I lost almost all my friends because I made the choice to choose God instead of the lifestyle. And so, Dave, you know, that's...
Dave, would you please close with a one-minute prayer?
Sure. Our Father in heaven, thank you for this 2 hours that we've had, and thank you for all of the gifts that we have in our life. Please allow ourselves and those that we encounter in the future to have our eyes and hearts and spirits opened up to really start to appreciate what is good in life and what is right in life. And have us to grow and prosper in a way that helps us out with eternal life and does not get us caught up in the instant gratifications of this mortal kingdom. We ask that we all are able to inspire others to live better, fuller, and greater lives, and that we ourselves are able to live greater, fuller, and bigger lives. And it's in Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you so much, David. Thank you, Doug. This turned out, started out a little rough, but it turned out to be a stellar show in my mind. I just really appreciate you guys a lot. We'll see you next week with Walls in Our Minds.
Thank you.
Bye. Y'all pop bless.
In Christ alone. Though I could pride myself in battles won, for I've been blessed beyond measure, and by His strength alone I overcome. stop and count successes like diamonds in my hands. But those trophies could not equal to the grace by which I stand. In Christ alone I place my trust and find my Christ.